Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we're going to discuss with the online patient advocate known as Blessings to get her input on the history of pain advocacy from a patient standpoint and learn of recent developments that may be impacting the community. But before we begin, we'd like to have a moment of silence, which Blessings can discuss further on regarding recent developments in the pain patient advocacy community.
Hi, thank you, Jace. I just want to tell you how much we appreciate you bringing visibility and transparency to the issues that chronic pain patients are facing, as well as their health care providers. An example of that is recently we've had several lives lost in our community. And honestly, before we proceed, I think just like to give a moment of silence in remembrance to honor their contributions to our community. And also, you know, think about all of the people who are being impacted by failed public health policy. Reflect on, you know, what we can do to, you know, bring solutions to the table. So if we could just maybe take a moment to just reflect on those that we've lost and think of their families and friends and our community.
Thank you, Blessings. I appreciate that. That was very nice of you to bring that up, because part of the pain community is the camaraderie that we share amongst one another. And as one of the more tenured pain advocates, you've seen pain advocacy grow, develop, and change over the past years. Can you talk about your own personal journey? Where did you begin? How did you first develop your conditions, and how did that lead you to become an advocate?
Well, that's a very long story. Before I begin telling you that, I just want to preface this by saying, when I came to the community, I made a decision really not to share my personal journey, because my main goal was to amplify the voices of others. But in light of much of what's going on, I, you know, feel compelled to step forward with a message of faith and with hope, and to encourage and inspire. My journey is not unlike other people's journey. I am not, carrying a message that there are not millions of other people out there who've had the same experiences, but I'll try to keep a very long story short by saying that I was practicing as a home health nurse. I was on my way to see patients, and a 16-year-old pulled out from a stop sign onto the highway. It was a foggy day, and I was proceeding at about 55 miles per hour. And she pulled out directly in front of me, and I T-boned her. And that was my initiation from being a clinician to being a patient.
Wow.
I hopped out of the car and immediately started checking her pulse and trying to check her blood pressure and telling her not to move. They literally had to take the roof off the car to get her out. And I thought I was going to walk away unencumbered, more or less, but that's not what happened. Fortunately, she did recover. The following fall, she was playing volleyball, and I hope that she's living a happy, you know, productive life. But I was then plunged into chronic pain and had injuries, and that began my journey with the legal system, lawsuits, trying to obtain the care that I needed, being what I like to call put on the hamster wheel of multimodal care being labeled and being what I like to call diagnosed with trash basket diagnoses, never getting a definitive diagnosis, to the tune of 15 years, I suffered.
Wow.
And yeah, and I also, you know, more or less felt coerced into pharmaceutical cocktails, gabapentins and Lyricas and antidepressants. It just, I literally felt like a lab rat guinea pig. And this was not really a good thing for me financially, for my career. And as everything began to kind of disintegrate in terms of stability, including losing treasured relationships, and, you know, I could no longer practice because pretty much the only thing I could do was sit in a chair at that point, eventually. You know, I suffered all the losses that most patients suffer, which includes, you know, losing your job or downsizing your job into something mm-hmm. that you can do. So, you know, that impacts your financial situation, loss of treasured relationships again. My house was foreclosed on. I call that the stripping down.
Right.
Where you're literally, you know, your identity is literally stripped away from you. And that's what I call the next phase is the jumping off place.
Jumping off.
Yeah. This is where patients really become suicidal.
Yeah.
Because everything they've ever known and, you know, has literally been stripped away from them. And it's, you know, perceived, in my opinion, by the healthcare profession as being a character defect or a behavioral issue.
Interesting. Before we go too far, and I apologize for interrupting, because I think you mentioned some really interesting points. I'm going to repeat some words you used. You said labeled, coerced, stripped down, and then you kind of concluded that by saying jumping off. There's always this cognitive dissonance moment among those who are suffering with chronic pain as they go through the healthcare system. And it's often in reaction to the healthcare system, as you're alluding to. Can you talk a little bit about that cognitive dissonance moment or moments that you've had and how that potentially led you to become an advocate?
Yes. Well, because I was, you know, I was kind of getting to that because I, again, do want this to be a message of hope, but I also want to relate to people out there who are struggling. So, you know, this is the point where you really have to start asking the hard questions. You know, you begin with, you know, why is this happening to me? And you really have to dig deeper. And one of the things that I did was I stepped outside of my traditional spiritual upbringing, which happens to be Christianity, and I began studying Buddhism. And literally, you know, Buddhism saved my life because I was able to essentially look at my life from a different framework. And that was, you know, part of my recovery and learning how to metamorphosis or phoenix from the ashes, let's say.
Wow.
But that may not be, you know, everybody's cup of tea, but, you know, that is part of the journey. However, I object to healthcare providers, again, pushing things like mindfulness, because that is actually part of a Eastern philosophy, and people arrive at their own conclusions emotionally and spiritually, and it really should not be, patients shouldn't be coerced into that. It should be like a natural arrival. You can encourage people, you can offer them resources, but you can't bully them into thinking their pain away, kind of thing, you know?
I like how you juxtaposed that, where you stated you want them to naturally arrive to this place where you allude to faith, hope, encouragement, and really contextualizing the experience of pain within a positive framework. But as you and I both know, often many people struggle to get to that point, and we see many tragic ends, for one, suicide, before patients can get to this point. So can you balance this whole notion of naturally arriving to that place you alluded to versus encouraging those patients to arrive with positive reinforcement?
Right. Well, I do think the resources are out there, but, you know, I do think also that the stigma, you know, prevents people from seeking help or reaching out or, and also part of my experience was feeling like I was screaming into space and no one could hear me. I mean, literally, you can tell people that you're in pain and they automatically their eyes just roll into the back of their head. You know, it's, you are not heard. You know, you go to the church. One of the reasons why I stepped out of my traditional spiritual practice was because, you know, it was evident that I'd been hit by a car at 55 miles an hour. And even the church was like, well, can you serve on this, you know, committee? And all they could see was this capable person, but they could not see my pain, and neither could my healthcare providers, and neither could my family, and neither could my friends, and neither could my employers. Right. And that's a that's a recipe for decline.
Right. You know, you talk about screaming into space, no one can hear you. It's this sense of helplessness or a loss of identity. Can you give maybe one or two examples of when you first noticed that this was happening, kind of where you first noticed the stigma was upon you?
Well, you know, when I let me say this, during that course of that roughly 15 years, I blamed myself frequently, thinking that this what I was experiencing was an isolated event, until I began to see my coworkers drop like flies because they were not getting the care that they needed. And that's when I really woke up and I was like, if I do not do something, I am going to be the next person. And that's when I really went after getting the care that I needed, which essentially wound up being, I mean, I have a total of 8 fusions.
Wow.
Six of them are cervical fusions. 4 discs were removed, and those discs were calcified, which means they were ruptured and calcified, had been that way for a very long time, likely since the accident. And literally my healthcare providers would not give me an x-ray. They just wanted to write another prescription for Lyrica. But as I, you know, and then also my spinal cord was like crushed from 12 millimeters to 6 millimeters. I was in agony and I was, you know, afraid that I was going to die because I didn't know what was happening to me.
Wow. You know, it's very interesting that you mentioned these, you know, these extreme struggles you went through and kind of, you know, these truly identity crises that you encountered. But part of what you really want to emphasize is the positivity of the experience, the ability to transform something into a positive. Is that important for your own journey, or you see that as part of something that's necessary for everyone's journey?
Well, I definitely see that, you know, that was part of the, what I like to refer to as the silver lining to suffering, is basically learning again how to streamline my gifts and talents into a new endeavor, into a new cause, a new passion, and take everything that I had learned, you know, and really, you know, like looking
very closely at what my gifts and talents were, what I was trained in, what tools did I need to get to move, to go forward, primarily so that I could come back to our community and bring the tools necessary to help bring visibility to these issues, which wow. I did. I promised myself after I received the cervical surgeries that if I actually lived through the surgery, once I was stable, I would get those tools. And I did. Wow. I went back to school and I got a degree. And it's really a technical communications degree, but essentially it's a specialization in social media. So I learned about, you know, how to do, you know, websites, coding, graphics, multimedia, you know, how to, you know, do technical documents and publish technical documents, because I wanted to come back to my community and help equip others to bring transparency to the issues that we face, which revolve around failed public health policy.
Nice. Now, how much of this journey was based on your previous career as a nurse, and how much of this came about through your own lived experiences as a stigmatized patient?
Well, I think it's equal. I mean, you know, after arriving, I mean, you know, there were days, I really loved being a nurse, okay? And there were days where I would shake my fist at the sky and say, why?
Yeah.
Why is this happening? And I spent a lot of time not really understanding why. And, you know, that epiphany didn't arrive for, you know, for a very long time. And so that is part of my message of hope, is don't give up. Because, right. you know, that message where everything synthesizes, what I like to call, not that I'm a guru, but in essence, you become the guru. You know, have the lived experience. You bring your own experiences to the table. And you have the power and the means by which to empower yourself to have a voice to make change.
How much, and I like the way you use the word empowered, because that contrasts what you said earlier about being labeled, being coerced. It was almost kind of a power being taken away from you. So by advocating, you essentially regain or rebalance that sense of power that was taken from you. Can you talk a little bit about that sense of loss of power versus gain of power and what that means as an advocate?
Well, for me, part of it is there's several components to that. One is just kind of broadening, you know, the scope of this is not just happening to me. And then becoming more educated, because the issues that we face are so complex, beginning from, you know, geopolitical, you know, to narco-terrorism, to, you know, third-party administrators and legislators. And there's just a lot of hands in the pot.
There are. I like the way you phrased it when you're saying complex. And I think, as we all know, that's probably an understatement to kind of describe the convoluted tangle of web that we find the pain and opioid epidemic. You talk in two ways. You talk about policy and you talk about individual experience and translating that into a positive. Obviously, they're not mutually exclusive. For people coming into the pain advocacy world and wanting to just really understand where to begin, would you focus on the individual experience first or advocating for policy change first? How would you approach this in advising a new pain advocate?
Well, I'm going to come from
space of what I learned when I went back to school. And to some degree, it's important to listen.
Right.
To kind of listen and gather some, you know, when you come, you know, specifically to social media, it's important to listen, you know, to follow the conversation. And then when it's when you find that you can add value to the conversation, that's really important to make that decision to then own your voice. And then, you know, we kind of touched on this before, but, you know, also it's very important to, you know, navigate safely online. You know, it's discernment is really important in terms of exactly what you are or are not going to reveal. And so, you know, you can opt not to share your story. It's taken me 5 or 6 years to even really kind of publicly, you know, come out and really share my story. You know, everybody, you know, evolves in their own time in terms of comfort. But read as much as you can. Make your own decisions. You know, it's a real eye-opening experience. When I first really initially came to the pain community, there are many occasions I've been very shocked by what I've discovered, and it can be very disconcerting. So make sure you have a backup plan to, you know, really take good, gentle care of yourself, take a break from social media, you know, go and, you know, get that good juju going in your brain and your body, you know, just by experiencing anything joyful, you know, whether that's petting your animal or, you know, taking a bubble bath or blowing bubbles or singing a song or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Because it can be really overwhelming. And I do think that sometimes I know for myself that I have to just say, I'm going to detach for a little while because I need to, because I have to.
That's a great point. Yeah, but that's a great point. You mentioned that a few key things that you mentioned that I like. You talk about listening, following the conversation, and learning where you can add value. As someone who really has followed the pain community for many years and has been quite an active voice on social media, where do you see the strengths of the pain advocacy community, and where do you see opportunities for improvement?
You know, I am daily amazed by the passion, the intellect, the sense of humor, the many great talents, the tenacity, the abilities within our community. I think we're highly underutilized. It's very unfortunate that our community really has the least resources, but there's so much potential out there, and everyone has something, a piece of the puzzle to bring to the, you know, to the situation to help us, you know, get a fuller picture. Whether that's you draw cartoons, you know, I've just seen amazing talent. So I would say that, you know, just our potential alone is probably our greatest strength in terms of, you know.
Yeah, no, I like
what we need to work on is, you know, I'm going to say tolerance. I'm going to say tolerance because we all come to this situation having had different experiences. We have different opinions. We have different political views. We think there are different solutions. But it's going to take all of us to advance this issue forward. So that there's a good outcome for everyone.
Yeah.
And no one is left behind.
Now, I like how you phrase the issue of tolerance, because for many people who are suffering with pain, it's that issue of tolerance that leads them to become advocates. But pain being very individualized also prevents them from understanding to the degree necessary each other's story. So I like very much how you phrase that. One of the words that really sticks out that I just absolutely love is when you said underutilized. And I agree that the pain community can add a lot of value in terms of self-expression, but also in terms of healthcare policy. And I feel that what's missing in healthcare policy is the input of the pain community. So from your experience, what can healthcare policy experts, the powers that will be, benefit from integrating members of the pain community into policy making?
Right, and I think that brings us, you know, full circle back to stigma and discrimination and marginalization and oppression and many, you know, like the root causes of much of what we're seeing, not just in our community, but in many other communities. It's this fundamental, what I like to call spiritual ignorance.
Yeah.
And that's putting it mildly.
So if there was, let's say, an opportunity to speak to, be it the DEA or CDC or FDA, and you wanted to advocate your voice and give them a message that you would hope they would carry on, what would that be?
Well, you know, all I can do is really parrot what I have on my website, which is essentially, you know, I fundamentally broke it down into, you know, several aspects, which is, you know, patients should have access to opioids, whether that's acute, chronic, or intractable pain. Physicians, you know, should be permitted their autonomy in clinical decision-making. They are educated and are able to assess their patients and look at the context, whereas algorithms and computers really cannot do that, seeing as we already know that algorithms are fallible and inherently biased. I would probably bring up concerns regarding research and also how the media is, you know, not portraying the issue fully. And then last but least, not least, that we have, you know, failed public health policy. And this is, you know, a topic for another day, you know, including the National Pain Strategy and the CDC 2016 guidelines for opioid prescribing, which has been a huge disaster.
Yeah, to say the least.
Disaster. And the accountability for that, the accountability for not tracking, you know, OD deaths correctly, the accountability for retroactively prosecuting physicians. We have a big mess to clean up. It's a big, big mess.
Well, thank you for sharing that. Can you share the name of your website and let the audience know how they can get a hold of you?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at PAC. Rise Up, so that's PACRISEUP, or at Blessing Box for You, or you can just Google Pain Advocacy Coalition, and you can check out my website. I'm always looking to collaborate with people. You know, my passion is really honestly helping people to, you know, build that foundation so that, like you, they can be an independent voice out there, helping to, you know, educate the masses and bring, you know, cohesiveness.
Well, thank you for that. I would like to conclude by asking you one final question. And this is probably the most important question of all, because it's focusing on the patients who are suffering with pain. Can you leave one message of positivity for patients suffering with pain, for that patient who may not know how to handle his or her conditions and is just struggling to find the resources necessary? What is the one message you would provide to him or her?
Don't give up.
Yeah.
Don't give up. You never know when you're going to get that next piece of information or when someone is going to come into your life and offer you the care that you need. Or you're going to encounter someone who reframes things so that you have a better understanding of, you know, why this is happening to you. Don't give up.
Yeah. No, thank you so much, Blessings. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to the audience, especially the moment of silence for those who have recently taken their lives or lost their lives through other conditions. The pain community is a very close community and one that should be heard more vocally among the policy experts. So I thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jay.
Okay.
And blessings. Blessings to all.
Okay. Thank you.